Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Let's Watch podcast. I'm your host, James, with my co-host, Carolyn.
Good morning.
And today, we're talking about a movie that maybe is too good for this.
Yes, Mulholland Drive came out in 2001, directed by David Lynch. After a car wreck on the winding Mulholland Drive, sorry, my brain was like, no, but it's Mulholland Road. Wow, take two. After a car wreck on the winding Mulholland Drive renders a woman amnesiac, she and a perky Hollywood hopeful search for clues and answers across Los Angeles in a twisting venture beyond dreams and reality.
Have you seen this movie before?
Yes, actually. I saw it many, many, many years ago. Like maybe almost like 10 years ago. And I remember really, really loving it. And I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, with all the twists and stuff at the end, I was like, whoa. And this time I watched it, I was like, what? So clearly I got dumber over the past 10 years.
Yes. I also felt when the twists were happening, I was like, wait a minute. Am I too stupid for this movie?
Yeah, because the first time my mind was like blown. So maybe I was just like pretentious film kid back then. But this time I was like, sorry. Huh? And then I spent, you know, however long Googling ending of Mulholland Drive meaning, you know.
Well, I think you could, like, you figure it out in the movie, but there's, like, it doesn't give you a definitive answer, which I actually think is to the movie's benefit. Like, I don't need my handheld. I want the ambiguity of...
Well, and they do spend a lot of time explaining the twist. A lot of movies that have twists, it's like a twist that you understand immediately, and it blows your mind, and then the movie ends. Whereas this one,
like,
they spend
30
like,
minutes.
Yeah, they spend a long time kind of unraveling all the twists and turns.
So I had never seen this movie.
Oh, interesting.
And I had did not read much, did not know much about it other than that it was a, like, David Lynch's opus, for at least in film, and starred Naomi Watts around a time when Naomi Watts was popping off.
Oh, of course.
Because I think this was probably close to The Ring, I believe, the American remake of The Ring movies, at least.
Could have been.
It was definitely early 2000s, like early
2000s. The Ring was 2002, so this was right before The Ring.
Yeah, so like Naomi Watts was, you know, one of the bigger stars in Hollywood after this movie. Because The Ring did very well, and it was very popular, and is still, like, at least for our generation, like, a movie that I remember and was very... People talked about the videotape thing for so long.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what I was going into. I just knew it was a Lynch film. So I was like, well, there's probably going to be like presentation of something that is representative of society and how it's like supposed to be like wealth. And like, it's supposed to be like, look at how great this is. But then it'll be like, he'll be explicitly showing you visually that the rot is right on just under the surface. Like in this movie, there's a part where they're walking through this very nice courtyard and then there's dog shit in the middle of it. Yep. And it's like, you know, stuff that's like just what Lynch does. And it's very effective. And he is a like an auteur, I guess. Like, he has a distinct vision. Now, I should say, I was expecting this movie to be more Lynchy. Honestly,
it wasn't Lynchy enough for you.
It was kind of straightforward until it wasn't.
It starts with like a jitterbug dance scene, and then goes into introducing you to like six different characters that you don't figure out how they're important to the story until like half an hour in.
Yeah, but like, you're interested the whole time, right?
This
and
is
like
true.
It's like with his like jitterbug stuff, I think it's just to like put you in like a, like, he constantly wants you on your toes and like a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Cuz there's the scene with the grandparents when they're like smiling in the car and they're like, "Oh, look at LA. It's like Hollywood, right?" But like, they're smiling in like a really over exaggerated way that is very off-putting. Now, for you watching this for a second time, kind of knowing what you were getting into, and I assume you didn't. Yes, and you've said that you forgot a fair amount of it because it was like probably over a decade ago.
Oh, yeah, I forgot everything. Yeah. So on first watch, I didn't know much about it, except that Naomi Watts was in it. And I really like Naomi Watts.
See, I don't.
Fair enough. Did you like her in this?
I think this is one of the best performances I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
She's so unbelievably good in this movie. 100%. After I saw this, I was like, oh, I understand the Naomi Watts thing now, because like she is unbelievable in this movie.
No, totally. Well, and it's interesting too, because she looks like someone that would be in a 2000s rom-com. Like, she has that face.
She's very conventionally attractive. She's like,
yeah,
stunning.
But she also has this like, you know, naivete to her that is like just perfect for like a Katherine Heigl movie, you know, but in the 2000s.
Yes, that's exact. Yes, except she's, this is the, just, I, how did they not give her all of the awards for this?
So
it's like so good.
On rewatch of this film. So the first time I watched it, yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And I remember thinking that like, you know, that this is a good movie. You hear a lot about it. It's David Lynch. It's Mulholland Drive, blah, blah, blah. All the film people watch it.
12 on like AFI's top 100 movies ever made.
Well, exactly. And so I knew it would be that. And I knew it would be pretentious and weird and great. And then I watched it and I was like, you know what? This film is pretty queer. And
hell yeah.
Right. But I thought it was really cool that I didn't know that going into it, like how queer it was. Like, there's
I had no idea.
Well, and there's no, like, I thought, okay, we've seen films where there's lady on lady action, but there's always still a male love interest for the main character, always, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't know. Yeah, no. So it's super queer. And I remember going, I didn't know that. And that's awesome that people don't see this film as a queer film, but as just like a good film that's a classic and something worth watching. And so I remember thinking that was really cool. So because I thought of that the first time, coming into it the second time, I was like, yeah, gonna be so gay. And then it's not for a very, very long time. And I was watching it and I was like, huh, with my, you know, 2020 eyeballs, looking at this 2001, I'm like, because there it wasn't even, like, normally these days when they make it, you're like, okay, you're really leaning heavily into this. Oh, good, you finally make out because we saw it coming for the past 2 hours. Because, you know, that's how relationships build. But there's not really the longing stares and things like that. Like, they have a weird freaking relationship for sure. But yeah,
very weird.
Because I had built it up as so queer in my brain, I watched it again and I was like, this is not that queer. I mean, it is. It definitely is. But
yeah, I mean, once it gets there. But like, yeah. It is. It's also, it's like, because I guess this movie is impossible to talk about without directly spoiling it. But it's like, spoiling once the reveal happens, it's like, well, that explains why it wasn't, right? Because like everything about their initial relationship is not real.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, so she's not gonna remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So of course it's like her fantasy of like how, or like what she thought was going to happen when she came down to LA.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of what her life actually turned out to be now. When you like put it, this is why this movie is like something that it, like when you think about it, you have to like really think about it,
mm-hmm.
because like it is, the movie reveals in the twist that Betty was Diane, mm-hmm. and that all of the stuff we've seen as Betty has not been true.
Yeah.
But there is another character played by Justin Theroux.
The director. Yeah.
The director who my interpretation is that all of the stuff we see with him is real. It's just not at the same time as the Betty stuff.
Yeah, he did seem, he seemed like the same guy, but two different, like, you know when you watch a show, like a Disney show or something, and they're like, oh, I wish I was never born, or I wish this never happened. And then you watch all the same characters, and they're all still the same people, but something has shifted, and so their mm-hmm. life could have just, like, taken a different turn. I kind of feel that way about him, because in the shift, in the before times, he's like this sad sack of a man who's like really kind of creepy and like no one believes in his vision and like things like that. Whereas in the new version, he's like confident. He has the girl. He has control of his own project and everyone like listens to him and everything like that. So they do feel like two slightly different versions of the same guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's like a reno as well. It's just like I do think there was like there's obviously stuff that is not real with his character, like when he meets the cowboy, that mm-hmm, is not that never actually happened. I think at least, but like they mention in the scene when the dinner when it's like really rough for Diane, because her, I don't even like we never get a actual definition on like what their actual relationship is, but like conceivably her partner is not being a good partner in that moment. that he was like, yeah, like my wife left me, or he's like, we divorced, but then my life got way better because I met Camilla. Right. And I was just like, okay. So I think like there is like maybe, and then you do see like the guy behind him who is like revealed, like earlier was like revealed as to be like the person who's running Hollywood, and how there's this deep, like the people who actually have power in Hollywood are the people that you don't know, who actually control things and can make things happen because they want them to happen, which is Lynch, I think, put that in there because he doesn't like Hollywood. Felt very much like, hey, fuck all of you. To me, him just pointing that out and being like, I don't like any of you. I don't want to work with any of you. That's why I'm going to go and make my own movies on the side now. And then actually don't make movies really anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because there's like multiple different things. Like, yeah, I find that Adam's character does change a little bit. But also Rita's character changes, too. So in the one version, it's like Adam is forced to cast Camilla, whatever version of Camilla you want it to be. And he doesn't want to. It's like Hollywood who's making him. But in the real life version, the implication is that maybe he wanted Betty, or maybe he didn't, but that Camilla like slept her way to the top kind of thing.
Or that, I don't think that wasn't my read on it, is that Camilla was cast, and we don't know which how Camilla was cast, but then during the filming, they like had a romantic attraction to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Camilla then left Diane behind because this was more favorable for her, is what I think the movie is saying about Camilla.
Oh, there for sure. That. I've read several reads on the film that have said that like it's insinuated that Camilla kind of like slept with the right people. Maybe not Adam, but like the right people to get the role. And that like,
She's weaponizing her sexuality.
100%. And that's how Diane falls in love. Like, to me, it's kind of clear that they did have some sort of relationship.
Probably real.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But like,
Camilla
just sees it as a fling and Diane falls in love.
Well, Diane probably is like, hey, this beautiful person is like interested in me.
Yep.
I'm going to get like, this is great for like, this makes my life substantially better because like I'm a struggling actress, but now I'm dating one of the most popular actresses in the world. Like that's, or I don't know, very well respected, I guess, or about to blow up. They don't really define it, but she is she is significantly more famous than Diane.
Mm-hmm.
And then Camilla slash is revealed to be like kind of heartless in a way, or like being like, no, you were a fling. I'm going to do what is best for my career.
Yeah, she's pretty cold.
Yeah. And then that's Lynch directly commenting on Hollywood, like pretty explicitly being like, it's full of cold, heartless people. And in order to succeed, you have to be one of them. You can't come in and be like you have to become a bad person you have to become a worse person to get your goals.
Yeah, and it's also pretty on the nose when it's like the Betty character, you're cheering for her from the get-go because she's a sweet girl, she's got big ambitions and big dreams, and then everything goes awry, and it kind of shows that, like, obviously Hollywood chews up and spits out, you know, even the sweetest young things, the most, like, innocent.
Yeah, and also, like, Betty is, like, Diane's fantasy of, like, what happened, right, is that... Like, it's an incredible scene because Naomi Watts is so good in it. But like when they do the audition, where Betty does the audition, and it's like, holy shit. Right. Like,
oh, this she's person, good. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's like that. That's obviously like what like people like, I'm the best actor. Like, this undiscovered talent that's just going to like take over Hollywood.
And like, what sucks so much about that scene is she does it and it's so good. And then her like agent or whoever pulls her out and is like, oh yeah, that movie's never going to get made. And it's like, oh. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, but like, we're going to take you to, like, I'm going to take you over, even though other people discovered you, and introduce you to Adam, because you're going to have a role that it's going to, you're going to, this is way better for you, and you'll get cast. And I'm just like, I was like, oh, really? But then she runs away, right? And you're like, oh, okay, because, and you're like, what is going to, like, at that point, like, thinking, I knew it was Lynch, but I was like, oh, my assumption is that Betty's going to do the performance and then take the role from Camilla, and then Adam's going to, like, blow up his life, and it's going to be like, he screwed over the wrong people and went rogue, and it's going to implicate both of them, and that's how it's going to bring Rita in, and that's how we're going to discover who Rita is, and then it's not that at all, and then it's revealed to be that that was not real. Like,
yeah, Diane. And that's why it makes sense, like, because at first I was like, why'd she run? That makes no sense, but they don't need to tie up loose ends when it's a dream world.
No, exactly. And it's not, like, it is a very extremely risky thing to reveal that a large portion of your movie did not actually happen or exist. Well,
everything up until that point.
Exactly. And, like, it's kind of, like, it's a thing you're told, even in any level of, like, education. It's, like, don't end any story by being like, and it was all a dream, right? Because then it just nothing mattered then. It, like, undercuts everything you've done. And this movie, when that happened, I was like, oh, we're making this choice?
Yeah.
But then you have, like, 30 to 40 minutes to, like, unravel why that was made. And, it, like, because there's what the movie does, and I think is very effective, is that at the beginning of the film, they do have scenes that are not connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because they happen in not in the real world, not the dream world. And then you, like, they happen and you don't see those people again for the vast majority of the film.
Well,
and you kind of forget about them.
Are you talking about the Winky's diner scene?
Well, I'm talking about the hitman scene and the Winky's diner scene. Yeah.
So a lot of people say that the Winky's diner scene is also part of the dream world, but it's key to the whole film in that it's basically this guy talking about his dream to whoever the other guy is, and his dream becomes reality. Like, he describes it and then it happens, basically. Even some of the shots that they use where it's like when he's describing it, he's like, oh yeah, I look over and there's a guy standing there at the counter, and he looks over and he sees nothing. And then as he's talking, and then his friend goes to pay, and then it's the same scene of he looks over his shoulder, exact same shot, but now there's someone standing at the counter. Anyways, he goes around, he sees that weird ghoul or whatever the hell that is. I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, sorry, what?
Weird, like, witch or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that that thing does pop out implies that his dream is real and that reality is a dream. And so basically, people say that that's David Lynch saying, don't believe anything you see in this film. The lines between reality and dream are very, very blurred.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I feel like that's people doing lifting for the director when, like, that could be in the movie. Like, I do think that is, like, a way you can read that. I don't think it's, entirely there, though. I also don't, like, I think that scene's great because of the acting in it, but I don't know if it really works for me. Like, that's the one scene where I'm just like,
But if you read it that way, then it works.
Yeah, if you read it that way, it works, right? But that is going back and reading. I just feel like, you know, and maybe that is what Lynch intended, but, like, that's not, I didn't read it entirely that way.
It is a very Lynch tactic to do that kind of thing. And I didn't remember that it was all a dream. I really didn't remember a lot about this movie. I didn't remember that it was all a dream. I thought it was just amnesia, something to do with amnesia. And then she realizes that she's not who she thinks she is. Or I thought she was crazy, which maybe. But I didn't remember that it was a dream thing. Yeah, a bit of both. But this time, having seen that scene, I was like, okay, this does kind of set you off balance for the whole rest of the time. Because you're sitting there being like, wait, what? Is this real? He was talking about a dream. What's going on? I saw an interesting... and short, it's only like 5 minutes long, video essay about the Winky's diner scene. It's interesting, actually, because I was Googling that scene and an article came up, and then I was like, ooh, look, a video. And I clicked it and I was like, oh, I went to university with this person who made the video. weirdly enough. But I'll send you that. You should check it out. It's really interesting because it talks about, it's very much from, like, a film perspective. It talks about some of the angles and things like that. But when you hear it that way, you're like, you're smarter than me. So
it's also one of the few scenes in the movie that are explicitly shot reverse shot.
Yep.
There's not very many other conversations that are shot that way. So it is different styles. I noticed it as well, because, like, normally Lynch doesn't do that because that's, like, very conventional filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And in that it was. So It is. I think I do agree. I think the Winky's diner scene is like very important, but it is very early on in the movie, and it's
and you haven't realized what it means yet.
Yeah, which I think is, you know, maybe that plays it like I did not watch this in a theater. I watched it at home. Maybe it plays differently when you are in.
What is it? Not 2001 anymore.
It's not 2001. I mean, this movie I'm sure shows up in like indie theaters and is shown all the time. Would be my assumption. Mm-hmm. But then the hitman scene is explicitly reality and not the dream world, mm-hmm. because then that guy shows up later and is, or maybe it is in the dream world, but like that scene is so, that is the one scene where it's just like explicitly in there, and it's just a little bit of a different tone. It's like kind of slapsticky but horrifying at the same time, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh god. And then I forgot about that character until he shows up again.
Which one?
The hitman.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. And then when you like think back on it, there's the scene with like the long hair that's like stuck out, and then the blood, and then it's like, oh, okay. When you see Diane in the dream world, like when they find Diane, it's like a similar thing. And it's like, I think this movie's very like incredible and like deserves all the praise it gets.
But that's what's so weird about this movie is there's so many scenes that you watch and then you forget that they happened, and then they don't matter until later, and then you've kind of forgotten what happened. Like the thing with the cowboy, that like was a just dream. Like a, yeah, it was, well, yes, like a dream. That cowboy thing was like a weird little vignette. I have here written Billy Ray Cyrus, which just, I completely forgot he was in it. And then mm-hmm. it reopened the whole Adam, the director's life. And I'm like, I forgot that was in the movie. Yeah, no, so much happens. Because like, it's interesting too, because a lot of it is linear storytelling surrounded by weird dream patter. And it's done surprisingly well. I think if anyone else did it, it would have turned out just a bit of a mess.
Yeah, it's definitely the only reason this movie is like coherent in any way is because of who the director is, that he's able to juggle all these pieces and land it. Mm-hmm. And even then, like, it's an extremely difficult task, because like if you screw up, like if you miss on one thing, it kind of everything would fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very effective, very good. And I do like how it's like you forget stuff like a dream, because it's like kind of like you don't, there's no like some movies, and I think this is like a correct thing to do in a lot of films, is like you show people like leaving and then like how they are getting from place to place,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, or it's like they accidentally enter a vehicle and like, okay, they're gonna drive there, right? Or it's like you join them on the drive and then they arrive.
Yeah.
And this movie doesn't do that.
No.
It's like Rita and Betty leave and then they're back home, and you're like, yeah. Oh, okay, so we've had like a big, like we're in a different time thing here, like we've skipped some stuff.
Yeah. But you never know how much stuff, which is like extremely unbalancing.
Yes. And they do that technique multiple times, or it's like Rita and Betty are asleep and then they wake up and like you don't know what time it is, or like where, like, and then they go somewhere and you don't know where they are because you haven't seen where they've gone. They're just at this new place. And it's very much like that's how a dream would, when you look back, it's like 100%. That's how dreams work, right? You don't remember going from place to place. You're just there.
Well, and if you question it, it doesn't really necessarily even make sense. Like, if you think about your dreams too deeply, you're like, well, but I literally had just laid down to go to bed. Now I'm at the coffee shop. What?
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I think that's really, like, that's just very, very good filmmaking.
Yeah.
And to make it still, to make it available, that the audience can still understand this is like, because if that's done badly, like we've both said, that's going to not work in any way.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be like, what? I'm just confused the whole time. And then you'll get like, or me, when that happens, I'm just like, okay, this movie's bad, right? Like, I'm not understanding.
I'm done with this.
So I'm just going to be like, this movie's not holding my attention. But I was never not enraptured by this film.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain scenes that I think are better. Like, the audition scene is incredible, because like, that's when I was like, oh my God, Naomi Watts is actually like an incredibly talented actress. Why has nobody used her like this in any other movie I've seen her in? Like, I didn't know she was this good.
No, she's great.
And then, surprise, surprise, when the queerness in this movie was revealed, I was like, oh?
Did you not know?
I had no idea, but I was like, I'm way more interested now about this relationship. I was like, there's, you know, Carolyn, I'm, you know, if you introduce gayness into a movie, we're both like,
Sold.
So are we more interested in watching the movie? Maybe. But then, like, that's handled really not to, like, you know, the next movie we're watching is Jennifer's Body, which is also a movie with queerness.
Gayness. Okay. To be fair, though, they're also movies who both talk about obsession, unhealthy obsession in queerness, which is a very early 2000s trope. Well, not 2000s. Early forever trope. Ever since the times of... No, you know what? I'll get that into that in the next one. But it is... They have the same trope, and it's not a good one.
No, but I will say in this for this movie, the sex scenes and the whole general queerness is handled very well in this film.
You're such a boy.
I thought the sex scenes were shot. Like, we'll get to Jennifer's Body when we talk about it. But I found that it was, like, respectful, and also they were not attractive in any way.
Tasteful titty.
Well, I mean, that's the only one where it was, like, explicitly, but that's because you're seeing it through Betty's eyes, right? And that Rita is a very famous actress who is gorgeous. So
and has giant boobs.
Has giant boobs. But that is also played like a dream scene, right? So like it makes sense. But I never felt like the actresses themselves were getting exploited.
No.
And it never felt got to a point where it was like it's perverse in a way of being like, oh, okay. This was obviously shot by a man.
Yeah, and you know how sometimes those scenes go on a little bit too long and you're kind of squirming like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to see this anymore. Thank you. Yeah.
We're at a point now where it's just like, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And now the second one is, but that's for a different reason. Because they start having a conversation about, you know, what is their relationship.
Yeah.
And you're just like, can we leave? I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Like, this is...
We shouldn't do this as they do it. And you're like, stop, guys, stop.
Yes, Dave, stop, please, 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 the whole time. But it's not, I thought it worked. I don't know if you did, but.
Yeah, no, I think it did.
We'll get to Jennifer's Body because that's the next one we're doing. Spoiler, we're recording two at the same time. and I did like that relationship and reveal. I thought that made, considering the time, I don't know the exact time frame this movie was set in.
Mm-hmm.
But it made more
sense. It's a bit timeless in a sense, which I think is interesting.
And intentional, but I would imagine it's not 2001.
Mm-hmm.
But it made Diane's actions and like pain more understandable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, you know, at the time this movie was made, being openly queer in Hollywood was not an acceptable it would not be good for your career, so people had to hide it.
And what's so interesting too is like I did like that they played like, because this was also I feel fairly accurate for the time, like Rita's character, her Camilla, whatever that chick, I like that she was like kind of openly and brazenly like keeping her women folk around her even though she was in a relationship with someone else, because no one would have been threatened by that at the time. And if you're famous enough, you're allowed to have whoever doting whoever near you. It's like, it's all a power move. Like the fact that she kept Betty in the room while her fiance, whoever, is making out with her in the scene. Like, it's a power move for both Betty and the husband. And the husband's not threatened because you wouldn't be at the time, because you wouldn't think that anyone would actually be queer, because of course that didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
It's just very interesting. And it's kind of like you see it excused all the time. It's like, oh, well, like he or she is famous. Like, yeah. They have their fling, or like that's their close friend. And you're just kind of, you just accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's very effective. And like I thought that was really good part of the movie. And it was also, this movie doesn't hold your hand. It doesn't explain any of this to you. It just shows, not tells, almost everything. So
what's her face has barely any lines.
I know. Not a whole lot of dialogue, actually. Other than Naomi Watts, not a lot of people have a ton of lines.
No, I didn't really realize it until I remember not liking Rita both times, mainly because I don't like her character. I think she acts it very well, but she sucks.
Rita sucks.
Yeah, and I'm like, Betty, why do you like Rita? She sucks. In all the versions, she just sucks. I didn't like the whole, like, wide-eyed, who am I? You know, I'm like, I don't know, go to therapy, you know? But,
yeah.
Anyways, I didn't realize until later she says something and I was like, this is like near the end of the movie. I was like, does she have an accent? And I still don't know the answer to that question because she says so few lines.
I do think the actress does have an accent. Mm-hmm. I think so. I'm not entirely sure on that, but I thought she did, but I haven't looked it up. But I noticed that as well, but I was like, eh, it doesn't really matter. They're going to be, she's supposed to be like in the dream world, like desirable. And that's mm-hmm. all that I really.
And remember, when women are desirable, they don't speak.
Stop it. It makes sense in the movie. That's not what David Lynch is saying.
Some people would say it makes sense in real life, too.
Yeah, I'm one of them. Stop. No. I think this movie's too good for what we were doing.
Hey, we came here to evaluate if movies were worth the hype or underhyped. This movie's definitely not underhyped, but I would say it's worth the hype. So, mission accomplished.
Yeah, I don't think it will surprise anyone to know that it is better than any of the other three movies we've watched. This mm-hmm. will probably be one of up there for, I'd guess, a long time. Mm-hmm. Knowing the other movies on the list, I don't, and the ones I've seen and the ones I haven't, I don't think there's another movie that is like this acclaimed and like this effective. I mean, this is a movie that like I've constantly thought about since I've seen it.
Me too, yesterday.
You're the worst. but it is. It does. It rewards thinking about it, and it makes it interesting to be like, I should watch it again. So I like see everything. Because like there was parts when you're watching it and you're thinking this is just like how it's being told, and then it's revealed to not be. It's great. I wish David Lynch made more movies.
But you know what? If he made more movies, they wouldn't be as good as this. Is the problem. Like, people start cranking them out and then they're not as good.
I know, but most of the movies he's made, even like the ones that I've seen, they've all been pretty good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, is there anything else you want to say about Mulholland Drive?
Mm-mm, nope.
Okay. I just want people to give Naomi Watts more roles because apparently she can be incredible, and I don't understand why she's not been. I mean, I know why she's not as in movies right now, because she's at the age, unfortunately, that, you know, when women become middle-aged, they just don't get roles anymore until they become grandma.
She's in a lot of, like, the only meaty roles for women of a certain age these days are, like, adventure-y type things, you know, like finding yourself or whatever. But if you've not seen Funny Games, she's really good in that.
Oh, I like Funny Games. That movie's fucked up.
So fucked up.
But that was, I think, 2007?
Yeah, maybe.
And she has... I know she was also in, like, King Kong around the same time. But that's, like, a big action movie. And I think this will coincide with Jennifer's Body, considering the two lead actresses in that film. We're also now in... I know they're significantly younger than Naomi Watts is, but are in a similar age region where there's like not a lot of roles for women of that age, because, you know,
Amanda Seyfried's making it work.
Megan Fox just is dating MGK has become like a famous person.
But she also kind of got booted out of the industry for calling people out in a time where Me Too was not a thing yet.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. We'll talk about that in that one. You can find me everywhere on the internet at James Willix, except on Twitter where the O is a zero, and you can find Carolyn
at Carolyn Dunk 93 everywhere on all the platforms. I forgot who I was.
Send us an email at letswatchpod@gmail.com, and you can find this podcast on all streaming services. And the next movie we're going to be watching is Jennifer's Body, but the movie after that, what we're going to be watching, and I should say we've added two movies to this list, which will, if they pop up, we'll tell them. Oh boy, it's going to be a really long one. It's on Netflix. It's the Bollywood film RRR.
Okay.
That is over 3 hours long, but is like universally adored. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably aware of and probably have seen that movie. It is available on Netflix in Hindi, I believe. I might be wrong on that. And I think it's available in theaters was available in theaters in other languages.
Okay.
Many different, I think there's a multiple different dubs that exist out there. The only one I know on Netflix is the Hindi version, which I don't know if that's a dub or not either. But I have been told that I would love this movie by people I know.
And it's brand new. It's a 2022.
It's brand new. It's 2022. And it is kind of the first Bollywood movie that's like really crossed over into like North American knowledge of it. Like there's been very, very popular, extremely popular Bollywood films, but they don't generally break through here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first one that's kind of done that, and people really like it a lot. I should say it's over 3 hours, so get ready.
3 hours and 7 minutes.
You're so excited for that. I can tell.
You can tell it in my voice.
Watch it with Anastasia.
She would. It is available on streaming,
so you don't have to watch it all in one sitting.
Oh, good. I won't. You know I won't.
No, I know you won't. That's how Carolyn watches movies, in 5 minute segments over weeks.
Yep, while doing the dishes.
I just hate that so much.